right? But the air is not stable, or the air move around by the wind, driven by the wind. So if the wind or air blow from somewhere in other place, air can hold the moisture. And this, if there is a very strong intensity or clustering effect of this like moisture, they form like a river on the land surface, something like that. And why to move towards the Arctic is a very interesting question. Climatologically, that means that in the mean state, the moisture transport from the tropical region to the polar region, okay, especially in the summertime. Because we know the tropical, climatologically, tropical is warmer than the polar region, right? And a warm air can hold more moisture. So more moisture in the tropical region, we know that, right? And less moisture in the polar region, like in the Arctic and Antarctica. And climatologically, there is many, many way to transport this moisture from the tropical region to the polar, and due to this weather effect. Think about a weather effect. Weather effect is like the rotation wing, right? Rotation wing just means that if there's a rotation, there's a rotation system, you can think like a clock. If a wing rotates like a clock or anti-clock, anti-clockwise, most of the weather system rotate like the anti-clockwise, and if a wing rotates like anti-clockwise, the two sides of the rotation is the opposite direction. One, think about an anti-clockwise rotation, right? To the right of this clock, the wing blow from the south to the north, and to the west, to the left part of this clock is to turn the wing blow from the north to south. So this system to the right and try to blow or bring moisture from a lower latitude, that is our topic, to a polar region. And but to the right, to the left, and bring the cold air from the polar region back to the tropical region. So this type of thing just play key role to mix the temperature gradient or mix the cold air and the warm air between the two areas, tropical region and the polar region. So this is a climatological phenomenon. But over the past 40 years or past a decade, we find more and more this system move toward like Arctic region and carry more moisture to the Arctic and change the local climate system. The goal of this study is not to only does a review or just like a present this phenomenon, but the main point is to find or give an answer to explain why this phenomenon has happened just since like the 2000. So our main finding is that it's probably due to the like a complex combined factors.
We know atmospheric rivers can appear in the winter Arctic. Why did your study focus on summer months?
I know it's hard to understand, but you can think of it this way. The atmosphere is very complex. It's not always operate like the chaotic feature. Right? Sometimes, over some time scale, like 10 years, 20 years, the collision could be show some very different features than the 20 years ago. And this change may not totally due to the CO2 force. It could be due to something else. That's what we call it a low frequency. Low frequency means the variation longer than decades, okay? This type of thing. Also exist in our climate system. And even there's a wind pattern change over very long time scale, like the longer than 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, there's a circulation wind pattern can steer or channel more air to the Arctic over very specific reasons. Yeah, so that is our main contribution of this study to the community, just to argue that recent change in the air or recent change of the moisture partially due to something internally driven rather than totally driven by the global warming.
Right. So you're not saying that all this increased moisture is necessarily due to human-made climate change. There could be other internal factors. Is that right?
So we find maybe 30-40% of this moistening trend over the past 30 years, 40 years, could be due to this internal variability. So that means another 50% or 60% is due to the man-made global warming effect, a move into the Arctic. So that favors increasing trend of a moisture there. But to the right or to the east of this heat dome, that is mainly over like the over the North Atlantic part. So that is the place we see some less air intrusion into the Arctic. So that means less and less air move into the Arctic over that part. So there's a, like a dipole structure because it is a heat dome structure. So we call this like the circulation wind pattern. And this pattern cannot be well reflected by the model of phosphorus CO2 because the model for phosphorus CO2 that favors very uniform circulation pattern. Doesn't favor this type of doesn't favor the generation of this type of a heat dome structure.
Your paper does take a close look at impacts of ARs on Greenland, and I'm glad you just explained that sort of sitting heat dome that can appear for a few years. Why is it so important to know what happens with atmospheric rivers on Greenland?
I think the main thing is that we open a new door to look at some like the cross time scale interaction, because we know the AR is a very short time scale phenomenon. As we said in the abstract, usually AR is believed as some like a chaotic feature, just like the randomness or just like a random feature or like a weather activity. So we don't think the AR should show some like a well organized pattern. But by our study, we see the large scale circulation pattern play like the low frequency variability, but it's a low frequency variability have some like the cascading effect to the faster process, like a weather system, like AR. And there's some like the interaction across the time scale. And this cross time scale interaction may amplify something we don't know before. So we think that probably the future we will explore more how there's the cross time scale interaction between the low frequency variability and the short time scale variability, how they work together to amplify or regulate the warming process in the Arctic or the place near Greenland.
In the news, incidents of a month's worth of rain in hours are popping up all over, from Toronto, Canada, to Connecticut, to the Alps and China. Are atmospheric rivers and extreme rainfall events different? Do sudden extreme rains require an atmospheric river? Are atmospheric rivers and extreme rainfall events different, or do sudden extreme rains require an atmospheric river?
Most of the time, the AR, we talk about AR is the wintertime phenomenon. And because during wintertime, the weather, like a storm, is stronger. And the wind, so you can think of it this way. The AR needs two components. One thing is a storm. The second one is a water supply. If the two things both exist, the two things satisfy the need, and the AR can be generated. And if we only have a storm, that means a strong wind, without like the moisture supply from the lower latitude, we don't see strong AR. We only see the strong wind, like the regular extratropical storm. But if we only see the moisture supply but no wind, so we just see purely like the humid day and without a strong weather activity, because the storm can generate upper or downward motion and favor the formation of a cloud or favor the formation of the precipitation event. So we need two conditions: strong rotation or something like a strong like a storm. The second one is the moisture supply, and we can discuss your question. That is what is the connection between the regular AR or strong AR with the extreme precipitation event over different regions of the globe? I think the content we think the people find the. But based not on my study, based on other people's study, I read some study in the past month. It seems like over some places, like China, East Asia, or some part of the North America, 50% of the extreme precipitation is due to AR. But this number may be changed. But basically, we can find the majority of the extreme precipitation event is due to the AR event, and so that's why we should spend more effort to understand how AR respond to global warming in the future, or how AR respond to the both global warming and the future change of internal variability in the next decade to come. Because we know that AR change will induce a change for extreme precipitation, and the extreme precipitation event will change the change in the other cycle, like hydrological cycle, or the oil disaster for the ecosystem, or for our everyday life. Yeah.
And there are a lot of other changes going on in the Arctic. For example, a 2023 paper led by Zhang Dong Zhang found that the paper title is Arctic Cyclones Have Become More Intense and Longer Lived Over the Past 7 Decades. And we had the Europeans flying aircraft into Arctic cyclones in the summer of 2022. So I was wondering, is there a relationship between your work on atmospheric rivers and increasing Arctic cyclones?
Yeah, I think so. As I said, just like an AR, cyclone is the part of the AR, but the AR requires moisture also. So if more cyclone and a long-lived cyclone or lifespan cyclone is longer, the longer lifespan cyclone means that the cyclone is not a stationary. Cyclone always move around. So if the cyclone can survive longer in Arctic, that means it can propagate longer and go deeper somewhere. And so I think it's consistent study. So we maybe looked at the same thing from different angle, and we looked at some like the, more like the joint impact of the cyclone combined with the moisture supply, but that is Zhang Dong's study maybe only focused on the one other aspect of the like a low pressure system. Yes, I think the both agree on the same thing. That is the recent 10 years, 20 years, some substantial thing has changed in the Arctic. That is not reflected in a one time scale, just like a short time scale, but also maybe reflecting the like a low frequency time scale, just like a decade to decade stuff.
Can you tell us about the moisture feedback relationship between water vapor in the Arctic and the loss of ice on both sea and land? Just an introduction. How does that work?
Yeah, so you can think like that way, because in the Arctic, we talk about Arctic amplification. We always talk about the feedback process. There's so many feedback processes in the Arctic. So the most important thing is that we know that the albedo, radiation albedo feedback. That is a pretty straightforward thing. Because I teach in my class, and many students can easily understand that. It's like when the ice, when there's an initial warming, ice melt, the either land ice or sea ice. And if the ice is a white color, right, once the ice is melted, and the bare land or the ocean just exposed to the sun, and absorb more radiation. So it favors the further warming. So this is the very basic feedback. But another one is that we call a moisture feedback. And this moisture feedback means that when the air gets warmer, air can hold more moisture. And we know the water vapor is a very powerful greenhouse gas. And if air can hold more moisture, and the moisture is a very powerful greenhouse gas, so more moisture favors more global warming. And this process also kick off the loop and favor further warming. So people think in the future, if Arctic become warmer a little bit initially, then the air can start to hold more moisture, and this more moisture favor more global warming effect because it is the greenhouse effect. Then we will go something much, much faster warming process started, will be started. So we call this type of thing like the water moisture feedback.
At the other end of the Earth, this year Antarctica experienced a prolonged heat wave during its winter months, including the second warmest July ever recorded. What do you make of this?
Yeah, that's a good point, because the polar region is pretty sensitive. But July is the winter time for the Antarctica, right? And this type of thing, I don't think that it's necessarily connected to the anthropogenic faulting. I think that many of these things we observe may still partially due to the natural variability. And why we didn't observe these things a long time, like a decade ago, the reason is that we didn't have a good observation data that time, but now we have a really good global coverage of the both Antarctic and Arctic. You know, for the satellite data, like 1980s data have a big, like black hole in the deep Arctic. So that means that the coverage can only reach to like 85 degrees. Okay, after like 1985, and the satellite can cover all the Arctic. So same thing for the Antarctic. Just like the many, like even 20 years, 30 years ago, our satellite coverage cannot reach to the South Pole. So we have a pretty good coverage, and our satellite instrument is much better, and many channel, and can cover different variable. And another thing is that I have to see, like, the global warming still favor, like, the tropical more active, because the tropical is warmer than, like, a 1 degree, like, a warmer than, like, a 20 years ago. And this, the tropical become warmer, may make the tropical belt a little bit expanded. Okay, this expansion is not, like the very large, but it still have, like, a few degree expansion. Just a few degree expansion, the tropical belt maybe can send some signal to the actual tropical region, like the Arctic and Antarctica. So some signal in the Antarctica may reflect some change in the tropical region due to the many, many different process. People still work on that. There are so many ways to explain this connection. So I think it's still hard to say the this year event, like the July heat wave event, is necessary due to the anthropogenic faulting. But we cannot rule out the contribution from anthropogenic faulting to this individual event. We need to keep eyes on the similar thing in the future. And to after many, many years data, maybe we can find if there's a trend or not. And we can try to understand at least the cause of this behind the change. Yeah, I think it's still too early to say it's the cause of this year's event. Yeah, it's still possible due to the internal variability. But we cannot rule out the possibility because of the anthropogenic faulting.
Just as a member of the public, if I see something like that on Twitter, that there's a heat wave in Antarctica in the wintertime, I go, oh, my God, this is global warming. But you're saying, well, no, take a little bit of caution here. We don't know what it's been doing.
Yeah, it's too early to see. Because it's only one event, we cannot see too much, right? It's still too early. So let's wait for some more time to see. It's only individual event, or we have seen some, like, the systematic trend in the next decade to see the similar thing. Like, every winter, more and more heat wave occurrence there, or nothing happened in the future. So, yeah, I'm pretty cautious people, and I want to wait more data to support any argument we try to raise to explain the phenomena.
Okay, so as we wrap up here, I'd like you to talk to us about the questions that are left to answer. What needs more research, and what are you looking at next?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. Even I ask myself, because I'm not a mid-career scientist, so I also ask myself this similar question many, many times in the past year. So I think my main goal is to have a better future prediction or projection of the polar climate, or maybe the global climate overall, rather than the polar region. So the point is that we know our model is good, but not perfect. And how to improve model, there are so many ways, but I don't know which way is good because we have a very limited resources. And what is the best strategy to improve model in order to get a better projection of a future climate is my main goal. And my main, like, the aim of my future research. And I think the one way for me, pretty clear, is that we should better understand the interaction between the anthropogenic faulting and internal variability. Because we know internal variability is also a critical part of the climate system. Even in the next decade, we cannot see that. In the next decade, internal variability doesn't matter, and everything is due to the anthropogenic faulting. We still have to see that maybe internal variability still plays some role in the future, but we don't know how. And another thing we don't know is that how the anthropogenic faulting interact with this internal variability. Because, as I said, internal variability could be strengthened, or could be masked, or just offset the signal due to the anthropogenic faulting. So we need to know both. And we want our model can capture both. So this is my main goal in the future, to improve our understanding or improve our future projection of the global climate, especially in the polar region.
From UC Santa Barbara, we've been speaking with Professor King-Hwa Ding, and you can look for his open access paper in Nature Communications. Its title is Role of Atmospheric Rivers in Shaping Long-Term Arctic Moisture Availability. As always, you can find links to all the science and news we just talked about in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. K Kinghua, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.
This new study published in Science Advances shows, quote, atmospheric rivers have shifted about 6 to 10 degrees toward the two poles over the last four decades. This paper also illuminates a blind spot in our science institutions and our personal understanding of what to expect as the climate shifts. Almost all the governments and studies examine trends over decades and plan accordingly. You are shown trend lines on a graph rising steadily, sometimes for 100 years. But in reality, short, violent bursts are more important agents of change. A hurricane traveling with an atmospheric river or a tornado do not appear on climate models. Extreme heat and extreme rain are all averaged out. We need to focus on extreme events more than trends. Somehow, perhaps with artificial intelligence help, models and predictions used by weathercasters need to become more fine-grained, enough to show and include the impacts of, say, 2 months of rain in 24 hours or deadly heat over 4 days. We don't have that yet. Averages and 10-year trends distort and underestimate the true risks of climate change. To find out more about damaging connections between atmospheric rivers and Arctic ice, check out my interview with Dr. Pingfei Zhang, posted March 1, 2023 at ecoshock.org. In that astounding science, Dr. Zhang and colleagues find airborne torrents are reaching all the way to the Arctic Sea. They weaken Arctic sea ice in winter, and that changes weather all over the Northern Hemisphere. This paper by Zhang and colleagues also points to possibilities of abrupt climate change. As co-author L. Ruby Leung said in a press release, we often think that Arctic sea ice decline is a gradual process due to gradual forcings like global warming. This study is important in that it finds that sea ice decline is due to episodic extreme weather events, atmospheric rivers. Look for the paper, More Frequent Atmospheric Rivers, Slow Seasonal Recovery of Arctic Sea Ice, published in Nature Climate Change, February 6, 2023. Of course, I'll put a link to that paper and the audio for the interview in my show blog this week at ecoshock.org. We talked about the poles, but it is obviously not just the poles getting water shock treatment. In February 2020, worrying floods accompanied Storm Dennis, causing record-breaking rainfall across parts of the UK, especially in South Wales. Some areas saw more than a month's worth of rain in just 48 hours, and that is in rainy Britain. An article in New Scientist finds, quote, atmospheric rivers that wind their way through the skies have been linked to 10 of the largest winter floods in the UK since the 1970s, end quote. In 2024, it's already to the point where some crops are ruined in the United Kingdom by persistent heavy rains. Fields are flooded, tractors are bogged down. As warming powers more intense rains, hopes for the UK to feed itself dwindle. Atmospheric rivers have become a new threat to UK food security for sure. They already overwhelm storm sewer systems built 100 years ago for a climate that no longer exists. Costs for adaptation are enormous, as are insurance bills and government emergency spending. Following the 2020 storms, the UK government announced over £5 billion to better protect 336,000 properties in England against flooding, all to be done by 2027. That is probably a tiny minor amount to refitting older infrastructure for this new wet climate, where extreme events become the norm. Next week, we tackle one of the largest and scariest changes looming in a warming world. Serious scientists are out there talking loudly over many channels, warning the North Atlantic overturning circulation could stop. Called AMOC, this great current is already weakening, as shown in scientific studies and observations. I've done interviews about that, links in my blog. The impacts are almost too big to imagine. The UK would lose its warming current, dropping up to 10 degrees C, falling to the climate of mid-northern Canada. Ireland gets a cold punch in the face. Scotland and most of Scandinavia would return to near-glacial conditions if the AMOC stops, and this could happen within the next 10 years or the next 40 years. We don't know. North Europe becomes uncomfortably cold, even while Sahara-like heat will plague southern countries like Italy and Spain due to ongoing warming. The continent could be split into hot and cold zones. I suppose the Alps would be the intermediaries? Join us next week for a journey into what it all means. I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. Thank you for listening and caring about what happens to this world.
Canadian scientist Paul Beckwith on the real big one for California, the Arc Storm Atmospheric River. From YouTube, check www.paulbeckwith.net.
This is the Arc Storm scenario. So they modeled the U.S. West Coast being hit in the winter by these atmospheric rivers that caused massive and devastating flooding. Arc Storm was a second full scenario. So the first one was an earthquake. They had a shakeout simulation on major earthquake, and then Arc Storm is named for an atmospheric river, AR, a 1-in-1,000-year storm, a megastorm scenario. This scenario is based on repeated historical events that are documented in geologic and historical records. Okay, so the last one was the devastating California was in 1861 to 62. And can this happen again? And what would happen if it happens again? And they found here, megastorms are California's other big one. Okay, we all know about the big one, the concern for the big one, but a severe California winter storm could flood thousands of square miles of urban and agricultural land, resulting in thousands of landslides, disrupt lifelines throughout the state for days or weeks, and cost on the order of $725 billion. Okay, this figure is more than three times that estimated for the big one earthquake scenario. $400 billion of property damage and $325 billion in business interruption losses. Arc Storm would require the evacuation of 1.5 million people. The flood depths in some areas could be on the order of 10 to 20 feet. Think 10 to 20 feet of Sacramento, like that happened in 1861 to 62. So it could happen again. And of course, all this water would mostly be in the most fertile regions of California. So there'd be a significant hit to food production. It would be a statewide disaster. Extensive flooding is deemed realistic in the California Central Valley, San Francisco Bay Shore, San Diego, LA, and Orange counties. This flooding is unfathomable. 25% of the buildings in the state could have some degree of flooding in a single severe storm. About only 12% of California property is insured, so millions of building owners may have limited or no ability to pay for repairs. There'd be long-term reduction in economic activity. Insurance rates would shoot up, not just in California, probably nationwide. And this is an arc storm is plausible, perhaps inevitable. It happened in 1861 to 2, but that's not a freak event. The geologic record shows six megastorms more severe than 1861 to 62 in California in the last 1800 years. Okay, so this is just a matter of when.
Sudden rainfall comes, it's a gusher. This never happened in my daddy's day. Nobody alive seen it like this. It's a gusher.